So today I'm now sitting with Vincent Tao from PP Live, and I don't think anyone who is listening to this is going to understand this model initially, and so just be prepared for some interesting things. I'll just say one thing to start off, 120 million users from a company you've never heard of in China, and we'll save the details for later on in the interview. Vincent, can you maybe take it away first just by telling a bit about who you are?
Hey everybody, and my name is Vincent Tao. Actually, it's very interesting. I just moved from the United States to Shanghai, China, about a month ago. And of course, I joined PP Live from Microsoft and took the CEO position at PP Live. I'm actually quite impressed about the PP Live. That's one reason. Maybe I'll tell you a bit more about why I joined the PP Live. And I've been with Microsoft for the last 5 years, and before I came to Microsoft, I was a CEO and the founder of a company called GeoTango. And we actually built a product called GlobalView, and the 3D Earth mapping technology. And many of you probably not aware, it's actually 2 years ahead of Google Earth. And the company would get acquired by Microsoft in 2005, and I joined Bill Gates for the Bill Gates strategic project, a letter project called the Virtual Earth. And I think many of your friends have used Microsoft product for the Virtual Earth. Actually, I led the team building everything from ground up. And now it actually has a market share of 80% in the B2B market and compared to your competitors. And B2C market and still like Google is very, very sort of popular. But in the B2B market, and Microsoft has take that market share. Before I joined, started my own company, GeoTango, which is a startup company in Toronto. I actually was a Canadian research professor in university. So I had a quite interesting life myself. Was a professor, researcher, and during my time in academia, I actually built about the 14 technologies sort of licensed to the private sectors before I started my own company. I moved from China to Canada in 1995 and did my PhD work there. And later on, I became a professor in Canada doing my teaching work, research work in the last 8 years before I started a company called GeoTango. So looking back, it's kind of an interesting life, and being in the university as a professor before and moving to build my company startup for 4 years, then joining Microsoft as one of the executives for the last 5 years. And after actually thinking a lot about my next sort of career step, I decided to come back to China and join the company PP Live as a CEO.
Cool. Yeah. I'm interested to understand a little bit more about you. You grew up in China?
Yeah, I grew up in China.
And how old were you when you moved to Canada?
That's 1995, so when I was almost 24 years old. Yeah.
And how long did you live in Canada?
About 10 years.
And so then you moved to Seattle?
I moved to Seattle, yeah.
So I'm interested to understand then, why you come back to China?
It's fascinating, and looking at my career side, as I said, I've been as a professor, and actually I was had the professor called the research chair professor, actually was the highest academic rank in the academia. So I feel I sort of understanding how that world is playing, and decided to start my own company as an entrepreneur. Being a startup is very interesting and very fascinating too. A lot of challenges. But after some of my company, Microsoft, people say, hey, be success from an entrepreneur point of view. But to me, I think it just start sort of dating me from research world into the business world. But at Microsoft, I really be executive making a lot of decisions and actually responsible for the global product and the business plan. And that made me really learn a lot about how business, especially large business, how you scale the large business, how you manage the large team. I actually put in Bill Gates on a monthly basis. And actually that be a lot of learning curve as well. And whenever you prepare things to present to the Bill, after that, I feel, hey, I still need more challenging work to do. And one of the things I actually sort of started getting excited about is China. Everybody knows China is growing fast, and actually I find they really need a lot of experienced entrepreneurs or people who have a knowledge about how to run a large business.
So there's a market for people that have had a successful company already and are interested in moving to China that come in and run a startup that's ready to go to the next level.
That's right. And being working with a large company, I sort of understanding how those large corporations are working. But in my career, I really love to do another kind of challenging work, is maybe taking a company to the IPO. Mm-hmm. And PP Life, and the target was set very clearly, is that take a company from, PP Life is not really a startup, and it's sort of early growth, middle growth stage, and we have close to 200 employees, and with this kind of size and with this kind of revenue stream, I feel that is an opportunity for me to take the company to the next level, which to me is IPO. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about your family? You just moved your family through offices?
That's a very good question, of course. That's going to be some challenging for my family. Actually, my family now is going to join me a week ago from Seattle, and this is just 2 months for the vacation. School now is school time, school break time. But they're actually going to go back to take the winter term. The fall. But we have not decided yet when I can move them back. Personally, I love them to join me as early as possible, next January sometime. But it's going to take some time for them to kind of adopt, especially my kids, to get used to this kind of environment.
So I imagine you have an American family by now, right? And so bringing them to China is going to be knock them off balance a bit, no?
Yeah, primarily, I think the kids. My wife is she's Chinese, so not a problem. And, but the kids' side would be a little bit a challenge for them, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how about you? How are you finding things living in China? I mean, you've only been here a month, but it must be. You go through ups and downs, right? When
right.
You,
yeah.
In your country.
Right. Yeah. But it's not. You know, it's not that difficult for myself. And in fact, in the last few years, I was responsible for the Asian business at Microsoft. I was responsible for the Microsoft online services for the China, Japan, and the Korean market. So I spent about 6 months last year actually living in China. So myself, I don't think I have a problem in terms of adapting to this kind of environment, especially when you're born in China, you have the culture side, the food-wise, and that's not an issue at all. Of course, I'm personally prepared to kind of commit myself and time and other things. I might suffer a lot of stuff, you know. You may have to give up a lot of things, but I think the opportunity is great for me to join the company and at this stage. Mm.
So let's talk about the company then. Actually, one more question. You reported to Bill Gates once a month. Like, what was he like actually reporting?
He's very determined and gets to the ground. And the first thing I can tell everyone is very interesting. The first meeting, I spent a lot of time prepared, really awesome deck.
PowerPoint. And you want to see it?
And his TA told me, listen, Bill Gates doesn't want to see the PowerPoint. And whatever you have done or what you are going to do, show me the demo. Show me the real demo thing, mm-hmm. Rather than sort of flash kind of, fantastic the PowerPoint, right? So basically, that's what I tell you. Hey, he really wants to see things that you get to the ground, exactly what you're thinking, exactly what you're doing, rather than telling him sort of surface talking,
right.
Points, thoughts, vision, or whatever, so slows that away. The second thing, and I think that I remember firmly, actually, that's shocking as well. And first meeting, and Bill asked me, hey, Vincent, show me your roadmap and your vision. I talked to Bill and said, you know, I want to build a team. I need to hire a lot of engineers. Blah, blah, blah. My headcount request. This is my headcount, right? I want to build a more incredible team here. Bill said, yeah, no problem, Vincent. By the Microsoft, you can hire as many as you want. But remember the bottom line. And we need $1 million revenue per ad.
Mm-hmm.
If you hire one person, just tell me this guy can bring $1 million. I mean, of course, for the whole team. So that actually gives you the sort of really to think about whether the market size would be enough and the timing is good enough for you to really invest. This is not something cannot be done. It's basically the timing and the ROI, whether it's the right timing and the right investment to get what you want. So the key I should tell you is how you maximize your invest and to the return that, at the 1 million per head kind of thing. This is actually very good, this is a good lesson for me.
That's two very powerful points.
Very, actually. Very fascinating. Basically, actually, just thinking about either deeply second, you must have a grand ambition. Don't waste your time to do tiny things. Spend your time.
$1 million per head, so a cost per employee, and that makes an entire amount you want, as long as they can bring in $1 million.
That's right, yeah.
And show like a working demo.
That's
so
right.
Not mess around with PowerPoint at all.
That's right, yeah.
Fluffy style.
Yeah.
I like it.
So those 2 points you can see, he's incredible. Mm-hmm.
All right, so tell us about PP Live. So as I say, it's the company with 120 million users that nobody's ever heard of. And it's obviously, a lot of people
love
Chinese software outlets have. So, and it's 120 million actively, like what's the monthly active users?
Monthly active users, 35 million active users. 35 million active users. And the total, the installation base, the downloading the software is 120 million user base.
Okay, so my understanding of the service is basically a service for peer-to-peer television. Is that an accurate summary? Maybe you can tell us.
Essentially, our definition is web TV, if you will. It's an online video aggregator, like Hulu, like many other online video company in the United States. And the platform technology is based on the peer-to-peer, P2P technology. So you can stream the huge, massive videos to a large audience base with a very little cost. That is the key, because everybody knows YouTube, serve a lot of users, that's great. And the bandwidth cost, and people probably aware of, is actually about $2 million per day for YouTube. Mm-hmm. There's no such a company in the world except Google, I guess. Even Microsoft would not be able to, interested even to afford that kind of business because $2 million per day in terms of cost. So huge sort of capital investment. So for this company, because they're running the peer-to-peer, and the cost on the bandwidth side is probably be amazed, it's actually about anywhere from 2-5% of the compared to other video companies in terms of bandwidth cost.
2-5% of cost?
Yeah, 2-5% cost of bandwidth. And maybe a lot of people ask me, hey, why, sort of a P2P, you're probably seeing the P2P company, the most successful P2P technology company is probably in China right now, in the world, looking at all the world. And there's some P2P company that have been doing some other stuff, but this company has been doing hugely successful for two reasons. One, in China, the population is huge. If everybody go online, go watch a movie, go watch a TV, watch those high-resolution stuff, it's really going to absorb all your bandwidth. Right?
Right.
The second, actually, bandwidth cost, the average cost in China is actually higher than the United States.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, it's actually about 2-5 times more cost than the bandwidth cost in the United States. And the third, the internet is not as great as the United States, even there's a lot of, the broadband penetration is very high. I think it's about 30% in terms of population.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to the U.S., it's like 70%. So internet infrastructure is still not as smooth as compared to the U.S. But for those three reasons, the BTP works very fine, you know, in China.
It works around those lots of problems.
Yeah, there's a few problems.
So my initial, as soon as I see like P2P CDs, moles, I haven't really played with them in depth. I do experiment with a lot of stuff, but I haven't with those because my perception has always been that they're not going to work very well. If you're depending on other peers to download stuff, you're going to run into problems. Now, obviously, you've just shown me a demo before this now where you can select basically out of a lot of movies and select the ones that have the most users, and playing starts within 10 to 15 seconds. And we were able to track to a couple of minutes within to a movie that hadn't had time to buffer yet, and that got there within about 5 seconds. So it works. I don't understand how it works. Can you maybe talk about
P2P is a, if I give people an example about how, because a lot of people have a perception, hey, P2P is something, you know, piracy, downloading stuff, you know, back to the Napster. But this is actually more like, you know, Juice. People heard about it, you heard about Juice? Yeah, the Juice model. Juice, you know, used to sort of work on this model. Skype is a P2P messenger, in the sense, based on P2P. So give a quick example about how P2P works. It's like you are building, let's say, the bandwidth is like, you know, building the transportation system. No matter how many, you know, you can build a freeway, you know, highways, or building infrastructure, right? Once you've got the, you know, rush hours, your traffic will be jammed. Mm-hmm. There's no way for you, basically there's no way for you to build this. You would have a capital limitation.
That's not what I get. Yeah. But what I don't get is how can you quickly stream from users that are a dollar around China? Yeah. A movie, let's say, is one gigabyte in size.
Yeah.
How are you streaming a gigabyte worth of movie real time to all these times?
So this is actually based on this all network resource management. So it's sometimes when I explain the way BTP is actually it's called real time traffic rerouting system. So once you get jammed, right, to the through the freeway, actually we quickly reroute those, you know, vehicles through the secondary roads and the small streets and basically sort of distribute the traffic from different nodes. So in China, the P2P actually has to work based on your network effects somehow. So you must have a huge amount of your seeds, we call P2P nodes. And of course, the beauty is we have a huge population, 120 million user installation base. So the user base is large. The network effect.
Even if it's really, really big, I get that. If I want to watch a movie like. Let's say a big movie, Dark Knight, right? If I want to watch that movie, which is a pretty big movie, and I want to track through to the last third of the movie, how does that, I mean, realistically, I think any mainstream big movie that's very popular, how many users are watching that in any given time?
So it doesn't matter from our PPI technology. So the way actually we handle it is people may consider the traditional PPI technology is, while you're watching the movie, you're sharing that the movie bits to others. Right.
We're talking about gigabyte music file, a movie file around users all
right. Around. So basically, for example, if you are aware of, are you aware of CDN technology, the cache technology?
No.
The CDN, right?
No.
Like Arkham and others, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean, maybe Arkham.
Yeah, you heard about Arkham. Arkham is the CDN, sort of cache.
Right.
What Arkham does is actually put a lot of servers.
Right.
Those servers will function as a cache.
Mm-hmm.
So once you've been, once the content has been watched through Arkham servers, Arkham will cache some part of content on there.
So you're actually caching parts of the movie?
We actually cache parts of the movie, actually based, so some based on your machine, some based on the other machine. Basically, everybody's machine, once they join the network, they become part of your cache. Your cache management. But that cache is like a swap, and first people don't know it's very small. You know, it's a just like you're using Internet Explorer. Actually, everyone uses.
And I guess one of the points then is if someone is watching a movie on their computer, they're not going to be probably using their computer. So in fact, you can't take over their internet connection.
Yeah.
And it's not really going to affect them. And so you can do a lot of caching for other people. Is that kind of the principle behind it? Because if I'm using my computer and you're filling up with bandwidth from, you know, I'm selling servers at 500 I'll use at the same time. If I could actually use it at the same time, that's pretty annoying. But if I'm watching a movie, I'm probably not using my computer. I'm probably watching the movie.
Yeah. Once you're watching a movie, once you start watching, like using the PD Live software to watch the movie, then we start to use the cache. So basically, as I said, because we have strong network effects, and there's a lot of user base, so at any point, we probably can find at least 25 to 100 people having watching, at the same point, a lot of people are watching movies, right?
At the same point?
At the same?
Or at more or less the same point in the movie?
No,
maybe 25 to 100.
Doesn't matter, because once you've been watching the movie, some bits will be cached at your machine. So that base of cache, whether you're watching it or not, will be transmitted to others, or be shared with others.
And
so you don't have to use. So basically, we're basically using machine as a cache instead of using machine as a compared to some other P2P technology.
But let's say I've watched a movie and I've been watching for an hour and a half, or 10 minutes. Left. Does that mean I have a full hour and a half of the movie cached on my machine and I'm serving up to other people?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
So let's say a movie is 1 hour 40 minutes long.
Yeah.
And I've watched an hour and a half of it. Does that mean you have cache inside my computer?
No. Your cache is very small. So on your side, you actually on your default is probably say 500 megabyte.
Mm-hmm.
So 500 megabyte. Let me be probably more than that. So on your machine, you might store many many movie bits. It's distributed management system. So you have many many little bits on your machine, but everybody else has all kind of bits on your machine. So basically, it's like a It's sort of similar like cookies, some sort of those technology. You actually have a lot of bits on your stuff on your machine.
But the problem is we're moving movies around with limited bandwidth, right? I mean, the average user, how fast is the DSL connection? 100 kilobits a second, 200 kilobits a second at most?
Oh, 1 megabyte. Usually.
The average user in China
is 1 megabyte, yeah. 1 megabyte.
So they have reasonably fast internet?
Reasonably, yeah, acceptable.
I mean, where I live in the Dominican Republic, most people don't have that. They have 256K. So, in fact, if you're saying the average user has 1 megabit per second, that's decently fast.
That's actually, also, of course, if you're looking at what we call the, you know, in the P2P technology, we have super nodes and the sort of ordinary nodes. And some we call super nodes, meaning actually they have a much more better network bandwidth. So those nodes probably stream a lot more stuff than some others who has less bandwidth.
I mean, I have like one of the fastest connections you can get in the country as like a home user, 5 megabits a second. Like, that's the fastest. And so that's only 5 times bigger than the average of what China, people in China have.
Mm,
that's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. So basically, it's like, as I said, it's a real-time rerouting system. So basically, you're looking at where's the jam. If the jam, you're actually looking at the secondary roads or other sort of dispatches, and you always real-time manage all those different nodes and share that that content among the network.
How's that different to what Juice is doing?
Juice actually, you know, frankly, you know, we actually look at Juice technology from this one of the reasons, I guess, actually was because of technology. Their technology isn't to the point that I feel mature enough compared to PPLive's own technology. And even at Microsoft, we have a lot of internal study about the PPLive technology. And PPLive technology was awarded even last year in the ECM, which is cloud conferences, and Google and Microsoft used to, you know, have awards. And PPLive was one of few Chinese companies, actually, the internet technology has get awarded internationally because of the P2P technology. And they've been showing very scalable in terms of supporting a huge amount of users and showing how reliably they can manage the, you know, the cat, you know, those video streams among the millions of machines. You have to tune your system. You know, it's not something you can do. You know, the algorithm side and the tuning side would require a lot of R&D and engineering work to do.
So that brings up an interesting point. There's obviously some really smart guys who've done that. You've been here for a month. You're in as the flashy new CEO from Microsoft. What happens to the old founders?
The founder actually will work with me. So we call the co-leadership. Mm-hmm. It's more like Microsoft and Google model. Like Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer and Eric Sherman and Larry Page, and those co-founders. So the founder actually of the company, he's a really very technology guy, very smart guy. He actually quit his master program. He finished his first year master program and quit because of he invented the technology at the time. And he jumped out and started a company. So he never finished his master degree. So it's quite an interesting story, like a Bill Gates.
Right.
And also his name is called Bill. His name is called Bill. And he respected Bill a lot. And if you go to his office, you can find a lot of Bill Gates photos there. So somehow we got connections myself. Like the, this is Bill, the person that said, hey, wow, it was with Bill Gates. This is the Bill Yao, is his last name. So we're actually doing the core leadership here. And this is probably, I don't know, it sounds like the first case in China. And you know, the core leadership, you know, running the company. You know, one person may make mistakes, and with two, you know, your brain, I think you have at least your the possibility of making mistakes is getting less. Yeah.
So you guys are he's CEO, your CEO, and he's CEO.
He's president. Mm-hmm. He's president. I'm the CEO. Yeah, he's president. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, is there other guys, or is it you two basically running the company?
Two others, we're the most key decision makers. Of course, we have a senior management team. We have, you know, CFO, CEO, many other incredible, you know, the senior management executives that help us.
I mean, it sounds like a good combination because you're Chinese born then, but yeah. You understand U.S. management practices. He's a Chinese local that's strong in technology. So, I mean, it would seem like a good fit.
Sounds like, yeah.
I'm interested, though, just to backtrack a little bit on you. You're obviously got a strong background. You could have, I would imagine you had choices of a lot of companies you could have come and worked at to take over and manage here in Shanghai. Why did you get PeopleLive? How did you evaluate the options that you had? Mm-hmm. What other kinds of options did you have?
Yeah, actually, before I kind of stepped into PeopleLive, I had two offers as a CEO in the U.S. and a few offers, CEO offers in China. But finally, I decided to go with PeopleLive. And I think the three reasons why I joined PeopleLive. The number one reason, I think, is still looking at the internet market. And even at Microsoft, we understand very well last year, the highest growth in the internet is online video advertising. And if you're looking at the internet, I define myself as there's two waves in the internet world. And the internet, of course, internet company, most internet companies are taking the advertising is the primary business model. If you look at advertising, I see from advertising types, there's three major types. The first one is the banner ads. Basically, the advertising, the internet company is taking the advertising ads from the, you know, the traditional magazines and newspaper to the internet. That can be the portal, right? Mm-hmm. Different websites, they share the banner ads. That's the first wave. The second wave, which is the search. And what search ads is actually, we call the yellow page ads, classified ads. Those are long tail ads, right. And that's been taken over by the internet, which is the second wave. And the third wave, to my personally, I feel, if you're looking at all the advertising space, the largest pie is actually TV ads. It's video ads.
Mm-hmm.
It's a video type, not a banner, not a text type search. It's actually video ads. And video ads ultimately will be moving, or at least some part of it will be moving to online, will be moving online.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to build sort of internet media to accommodate the video, to accommodate those video ads.
And I love the online video, which is like a Hulu type of model, which is a web TV. I feel that's more natural.
Yeah, that's your reason for this. Why did you choose this company over another five in Shanghai?
Yeah, so that's the main reason, because the major direction I find is incredible. And the second one is, in order to do well for the internet video, and this is something amazing. I don't know whether people have heard about it actually last year in the United States. And the view, the usage of the bandwidth usage by the video is about, is equal to the entire bandwidth in 2005 of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all occupied. By 2010, that's predicted by the CTO of AT&T, 2010, 8% of the bandwidth will be occupied by the video usage online.
Mm-hmm.
And even Microsoft claim our own system will not be able to accommodate the video usage in the next 3 years, all the data center capacity.
So basically, Phil, there's a business model behind it, there's a growth behind it, and I mean, is that, I guess, I understand like the selling points of the company. I'm more interested in, was it just the company and technology, or was there something about the fact that it was located in Shanghai, the team that was here? You're a guy with a lot of options.
Right. I think that's the first two reasons I said it's on a video. The second is because the company is running P2P. And P2P is, I think, it's a killer app to solve the problem of video, the cost of supporting video online.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, you can have a lot of traffic like YouTube. At the same time, you actually, your cost curve is getting increased too.
Right.
You have a user traffic, you have a cost curve. But how do you actually balance that and build a sustainable business, a profitable business? Is you need to have a traffic. At the same time, you actually need to lower your cost of traffic. So those are actually P2P words. And
right.
Meetback has recognized actually by the technology companies, PP Life, you know, there's very few Chinese companies being recognized as a leader in the technology front.
Well, I think more important than being recognized is the fact that you have a big user base, right? That's, to me, that's the kind of recognition
for the
China,
out. Yeah, for the China, yeah.
I want to talk about that. So on to
the Shanghai, actually, was, I think is not the top of my sort of my list.
Oh, really? What would be number one city?
To the others, yeah. If I have a good opportunity, I can move around.
Mm,
yeah. Not really because Shanghai.
So the obvious one of the big questions is you're running all this TV, all these movies. It's all totally legal in the United States, right? The copyright laws would be a huge problem, but here in China, it's totally fine. So
it's not totally fine, I don't think. Yeah.
Here in China, it's not.
No, of course not.
Oh, tell us, what's the legal status of? I imagine so. You're in some kind of gray area. How bad is
it? Yeah, it's gray. It's a bit gray. Of course, it's not as clear as in the United States and in China because it's the content side. Most of Chinese content is state-owned, so the state-owned, the content side. So in terms of that, and we need to work really, we have to partner with all those major content providers. That's what we have to do in China, and that's not great. That's actually very clear. The gray area is the foreign content that comes from U.S.
Right.
and other places. One is those content do not have landing rights in China,
mm-hmm.
meaning even those movies you cannot actually, for example, CNN. CNN, you probably can see the CNN in sort of a selected hotels,
mm-hmm.
you know, because there's a lot of international, you know, foreigners living there, and not allowed to actually show on cable TV
mm-hmm.
for popular Chinese audience. So for internet right now, especially for those like ones, like the CNN ones, we still cannot deliver the CNN.
But can you actually block it to pass the TV from the internet? So you can actually block CNN through your service, can you?
Actually, we're blocked right now because that's by law.
So you only allow stuff that can legally be broadcast in China?
That's right, yeah. And even this gray area, this is most some of the movies, especially US movies, never actually get a chance to get into China, export into China.
And so those you block?
And those actually, because they don't have a rights, and most Chinese audience would want. And for China right now, we're actually okay for those movies.
Right.
That's the gray.
So the US company, there's not much they can do. When you're a Chinese company, what are they going to do to you in China?
Because they don't have a landing rights in China, so they could not sue it. And in China, those areas defined as a gray. I think this can be changed at some point. So I think we work with really well with Tang Guan Sun myself, working with them actually building a relationship with they even want to sell those movies in China, but they cannot because they don't have rights to even distribute those content in China.
Mm-hmm.
So this is more like this sort of the gray means that this is a sort of a no mass control. Government will not control the content provider will not be able to control it.
So how much content are you actually blocking?
Blocking
CNN, like how much TV channels, movies, and things like that do you actually actively stop? Do you have any idea on the numbers?
Oh,
I know you just knew with the company. I'm asking a lot of fairly.
Yeah, actually most of I think 95% of your content is your Chinese content. So
mm-hmm.
the Chinese make content here, which are legally can be distributed legally.
So it's legally redistributed within the country.
Yeah,
so you have about 5%.
So we have no problem. So 5%, as I said, is sort of a gray things, which those ones they do not have distribution rights, with the landing rights, meaning those in China you cannot. Basically, in China, you can show it, or you are not the, is not on the block list. For example, CNN is on the block list. Once it's on the block list, we definitely cannot show all of them. On the block list, the one on the block list, we can show it. But there's the ones that are not on the block list. They're actually, is there no regulation saying you can or cannot? Those are the gray areas, basically,
right.
You can or cannot. So those ones, that percentage.
But, so, you know, is that 5% like 8% of the viewership?
Not that much, but I would say, yeah, they do maybe about 40-50%. Because real hot, hot stuff, right? Right. Real hot stuff, yeah.
So what happens if there's a new movie comes out? Can I put a movie on PP Live? Or has a new movie gone?
Yeah, it's different. PP Live is different from, it's more like a Hulu model. So we do have a large team, like the editorial team, to do the cleaning up, do the editorial.
And you put Chinese subtitles on them all too? All of them have Chinese subtitles.
That's right, yeah.
So they're in English?
So English, yeah.
So, in fact, I can download the client and use it as long as I can work my way through the UI.
Yeah, because if you're talking about those vital standard grade things, mm-hmm. and they actually can use English, but we have subtitles in Chinese, yeah. Translate. Only subtitles in Chinese, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So you actually can watch it.
No, I'm going to try.
But actually, we block it. Yeah, for international, we do block it.
Is it for US as well, also?
Yeah, it's blocked, yeah.
What about Dominican Republic? Dominican Republic's blocked?
I think it's blocked, yeah. All international is blocked, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So because those are the, if you're watching, you can watch all the Chinese movies, international, not blocked. That's not blocked. But we put up great stuff, yeah. And
so that's how you're keeping it, so you don't get into trouble with the US
company? With other content providers. Yes. That's what we work really well with all those content providers, so we do not violate their rights,
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So I want to ask the big question, which for me is a big question anyway, is how do you think I monetize this?
Currently, primarily it's actually video ads, because as I said, video ads could be the next big thing for internet companies.
Mm-hmm.
And after the portal, after the search, I think the video ads, and we do see the advertisers start to appreciate the measurability of online media. Because when they spend a lot of money to build those video ads, right? They have Star, they have bang, all kind of marketing plan to build video ads for 30 seconds, and they love to distribute as much as possible. And for the younger generation like China, probably those are the most powerful sort of in terms of purchase power, and they spend internet more and probably more than the other categories. So you see they're shifting from their video ads budget for TV to the internet.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what will it be at like? I'm going to be watching every 40 minutes. It's going to be 10 or 20 minutes of ads, like in the US. So, how far are you able to push ads versus content?
Yeah, it's actually much more clean than the TV ads. And usually for the TV, if you remember that between the two programs, they might have like a two or three or four even ads in between,
mm-hmm.
right? For us, I actually only show one ad between each program. And usually what you do is 15 seconds video ads.
Mm-hmm.
We prefer 50 seconds rather than 30 seconds. So 50 seconds the view ads. And the standard TV view ads is actually 30 to 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually sort of shorter that view ads.
How frequent?
How frequent is actually we only do the pre-roll. We did not release the middle roll. Mm-hmm. Middle roll is in like certain music about video ads. We did not show that. We only show the pre-roll view ads. I think the reason is first we want to incrementally get people to sort of used to this kind of ads without being frustrated. Oh, I'm sort of watching the same thing.
Right. I guess one of the risks you have in this model is if you run out of advertising and using it, you're like, screw this, I'm just going to go and watch, I'm going to download this myself and just watch without ads. So there's balance, right?
Yeah. Downloading takes a lot of time, right? People really want convenience, but the internet user is the most important one is for the convenience. They just want to click and start you watching it. And that's why we'd be very careful in terms of adding ads into the video stream. And currently, we only do the pre-roll at the moment. Yeah.
I guess you can follow the same model as Hulu. I mean, Hulu's made it work. You can do the same as Hulu, right?
Yeah, very much so. And we actually try to learn a lot of things that have been done on the other side, like Hulu. But the China audience will be very different. That's something actually I want to partner with a Chinese company like my founder, working scheme, because I feel that the Chinese audience in terms of the user behavior can be very different from others, in the other side of the world. Yeah. In terms of the ad types or the formats of ads.
And I mean, I guess I'll just ask, and I imagine I don't know the answer to you, but do you have visions of this going international? I mean, is this a company that could become a Google TV? Is that kind of your intention?
Yeah, that's one reason my next kind of target is really want to build a Chinese company to international space. That's a feel I have my experience and my knowledge, and I can help Chinese company to the international. And very few, there's a lot of Chinese successful Chinese company. They only do well, just in the Chinese space. And so my vision is really bring the company to the next stage, to the international. And in fact, we're doing that right now. And working with us, I'll be back to US in mid-August, and I'll be meeting with many other kind of bank partners. And I hope that we actually can start to even to kind of copy our model, share our experience, special technology from working with many other partners.
That's something from this trip, just aside the readers, like one of the things that I've seen in China is it's like a crazy scientist lab of business model being tested very cheaply. I had lunch today with a guy who they're doing 4 million a month, I think was the number, and they've got 13 employees, and 13 or 15 employees, and they're spending $30,000 a month. the sort of efficiency of models like that, and I imagine that PPLive must have similar, obviously larger, but similar sorts of efficiencies, they're insane. And you get to be so cost effective that it's going to be difficult for US companies to compete with the kind of cost structure that you can put in place. Yeah. Am I incorrect?
Yeah, this is actually one of the reasons I think you did not ask why I went back to China.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a choice, either stay in the United States and either starting my own company or, you know, join another company as CEO. When I look at the competition really changed in the United States. The first, for a technology-based company, and China used to be considered sort of labor power. But now it's actually, I think, the power is more the knowledge workers, you know, the power of knowledge workers. And huge, you know, sort of day-to-day, you know, 600,000 new engineers graduate from university. And in the United States, we probably have like one-fourth of it, and even one-fourth of it, many of them, even less than that, you know, the Microsoft number we look at. So the huge amount of those engineers, they're smart, and they work hard. Not like, you know, 95 guys, like, oh, you start enjoying life. Everybody sort of really want to make something happen. So this momentum of this culture right now. So I find, first, we have really strong kind of, knowledge infrastructure, very strong. The second, the capital infrastructure. So first, knowledge infrastructure, with people. Second is not the capital infrastructure. In China, it's actually something you can imagine. Actually, the valuation of a Chinese company is higher than a company in the valley. In the Silicon Valley.
It's higher in China.
It's higher in China in terms of valuation of the company. If you start a company like this tomorrow, I work with five guys, I can get $5 million, no problem.
Mm.
And in the US, it's very, very well, very, very well, you actually can get $5 million with that. In China, valuation is high because many of those startups, when this, actually their roadmap is go to NASDAQ for IPO,
mm-hmm.
where you have seen all the companies like Baidu. Baidu is making $350 million last year.
Mm-hmm.
The valuation is $8 billion,
mm-hmm.
right? $8 billion company, but they only need to make a small amount of money, but the valuation is, by the way, I think it's about 2 to 3 times in terms of valuation higher than Google.
Oh, okay.
Right, in terms of valuation. Another Chinese successful company like Alibaba, you probably heard about it, and Tencent. Valuation still on the market, 50% of 50.
So why is Baidu is that much higher? Is it just because there's that much growth being pressed into China?
It is.
Or is there a bubble?
It is growth. Because people look at the growth of those Chinese companies. They're still small, right? But the country internal demand is growing crazy. Probably in China, you find that, you know, this, like I know, when I was in Shanghai a little month ago, we had the first, the international, the vehicle festival, you know, selling cars and stuff. The first day, Ferrari, they sold 50 Ferrari in the first day. It's never happened in the world, mm-hmm. anywhere else. And currently, 50% of luxury goods, like, you know, Rolex and those watches, and 50% of luxury goods is sold in China.
Mm-hmm.
China is now occupied 50%. Although they're only small percentage of those franchise, but you know they just have quite a sort of buying power to get the whole economy to boost. And of course, China still sort of a really bumping economy these days, and the growth ratio is still probably going to keep the 2 digits at this moment. So the potential growth is still there. It's not just 5 years; it's probably 10 years. So that's why the valuation of the Chinese company in terms of IPO is always higher because they have a much more longer runway for them to grow. Instead, we can, for many companies in the United States, we already can see, oh, you are already either you've been dominated and that is the exact market size, you will get it.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the end of it. But China can see whole. That whole notion of the future growth is unpredictable, and that's incredible. So that's one of the reasons. So I think that's a key reason why I moved back to China. I feel, for this time of being, maybe being part of a Chinese company can grow the company much more bigger,
mm-hmm.
because I have a capital infrastructure, I have a people infrastructure. What else I need is, of course, management. Which I can bring the company with this management.
And by the way, you happen to be Chinese.
Happen to be Chinese, and I can talk to them, no problem. So that I found, well, you know what, that's an advantage, and you know, I think I should take, you know, and really can leverage my experience as a kind of Chinese and a person who has, you know, overseas experience. Yeah.
And one thing we haven't talked about, and we do need to, is like the funding of the company, the revenues of the company, all that sort of stuff. Now, I know you're going to tell me the thing you can't tell me, so I'll just ask you to tell me what you don't want to tell me. can you talk about, like, how did a company get started? How did it get to where it's at now? I mean, the founding guys didn't just, like, start off with money, did they go and develop themselves for a while and then go and raise some rounds? Like, how's all that evolve?
Yeah, the company has about just 4 years old, actually, last month. So the first time I joined the company is actually big, the one public party. It's celebrating the first year birthday of the company, so this first year. But actually, it's
4 years.
The fifth year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because 4 years old. They started in 2004, but actually, they have, at the time, they just a whole bunch of university students. They actually got the first venture capital money, is around, you're probably laughing, it's actually around $150,000
mm-hmm.
US. Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's so they're going to
end around, basically? It's actually a VC, but a very small VC money. It's funny, it was several students, and they might be doing something interesting. And the first thing they did is, at the time, they're university students, they really want to watch the MBA. right? The best one, and they could not find. They don't have televisions in the university. So he programmed it and did the live broadcasting of the TV. So they start to sort of distribute the software within the campus. So they 2 months later they got the first $157 US. And but actually incredibly is in 6 months. So in 3 months, the traffic grew 500%. Right. Almost all the campus university students started using software, most of us instead, like Facebook and those stuff on the university. So they become the very, then they actually quit the university, like Mark, they quit the university, and they actually moved from Wuhan to Shanghai. They used to be located in another city, and it's in the center of China. So they moved to Shanghai because they think in Shanghai you can attract more, you know, talents and should be able to get more capital money. So they've been identified by the Burlam and the DFJ. Those VCs. So they raised about, in 2007, they raised about $25 million.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, $25 million. That was the last round of the company. And currently, they, for the last MBA, because of the MBA, for the last MBA, you heard about Yao Ming, right? That was one of Chinese girl. Ming Yao?
I'm sorry, what do you mean by MBA? I don't know.
MBA.
Oh, the MBA.
MBA, yeah, he's an MBA.
The basketball.
Basketball, yeah, MBA. There's one Chinese hero, and he's actually the NBA player, called Ming Yao.
Okay.
Yeah, Ming Yao. And he's actually one in the team. So the last time we estimate nearly one third of Chinese people are watching NBA from PP Live.
Oh wow!
Watching the
live. One third of your users.
One third of Chinese users.
Chinese
audience. But nearly one third of Chinese audience.
I mean, talk about total numbers. Like how many individuals?
Probably about the six. Most are watching the live broadcasting of NBA games. Mm-hmm. Right. About 6 million.
You had about 6 million
in China? No, probably 6 million in China at that date.
So you had 6 million people simultaneously watching?
Simultaneously watching, yeah.
I mean, is there
that's about one-third of Chinese sort of total audience who are actually watching that NBA games.
And watching
some are watching from TV, some watching from software, some from...
I mean, it would seem like you've got to become like you're going to become like ABC or CBS, right? You're going to become TV network. I mean, you are, but you really will become. Is there a reason why you wouldn't become one?
We'd probably be very, because right now we're still be sort of aggregator. We're like distributing.
That's what ABC is.
Yeah, it's more like an aggregator. We're not producing our own content.
But I mean, you don't have to, right? I mean, you could just be a network.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not telling you anything that I know. I'm sorry, can you keep telling us about...
So this company, right now, you just talked about what the company's doing, and the company's doing, and we're actually just up and joined. I will start to sort of start to hire more people, and we're nearly 200 right now. Probably by the end of the year, we need to increase at least one third of it, so we're hiring, you know, a lot more
people. So you have a lot more capital? Are you going to raise more money, or you got plenty?
We actually, at the moment, actually, we're raising more money right now, because I take more aggressive approach for the company. And finally, you know what? They have a very good foundation. The company has not yet break even. Based on the capital, based on the revenue stream right now, actually, can get break even this year. But the purpose is sort of postpone the break even time because I want to invest more. I don't think you need to break even too early.
And why is that? So help me understand. Why would you not focus on figuring out a great monetization model right now so that you can monetize and grow the company naturally? Because there might be an explosive way to monetize the company now, so you don't need to go and raise capital.
That's actually a good question. And it's not about not investing on monetization. Actually, a lot of capital that we raise will be used to invest in marketing, in expanding our sales team, the sales force, and even expand to international, some international sales as well. So it really is one focus on the revenue side. The other is focusing on the technology, the platform side. So that's capital we're raising actually for two purposes, revenue as well as our R&D investment. Because I feel the company has a unique asset in terms of its technology. And that's something people would have lasting value down the road.
But if you figure out the monetization now, that value doesn't go away.
We actually invest a lot on that in terms of the monetization, video ads monetization. The big Easter stock market. The gross ratio of video advertising is actually grow very fast. It's the highest among any advertising types, like banner ads, social ads, email ads, whatever. Video ads grows highest. And we should be able to enjoy that highest growth ratio. So our revenue growth is actually about 3 digits year by year, over 3 digits. So that revenue stream is actually going well. That's why we have no problem in terms of getting company, you know, to the break-even point. But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just sometimes on the internet, like some little twist will like triple your revenues even more, right? I mean, then you suddenly just take off and then you don't need money. I guess I don't understand why you wouldn't try and find a way to monetize your site now rather than going out and raising it.
Yeah, I think that this company still need to, you know, 200 companies still not like a huge big company, right? We still need a lot more work to do. And on the management and the process side, especially say, on the R&D part of it, in terms of getting the technology much more strong. For example, we do have clients requesting to license technology for a certain region. And our system is still not sort of good enough in terms of like, providing APIs, everything sort of ready, sort of a box approach and giving people to use it. We actually can use it internally. But in order to expand our network, I feel that we need to offer our partners the same technology so we'll be able to sort of operate the same business in the other parts of the world. So it's still a lot of work to do to get companies to the shape. One, as you said, we can sort of leverage our own revenue stream and invest through our revenue to make that work. The other, of course, use external capital to boost this growth. I'm actually taking a latter approach because I feel that actually first, we have no problem to get some capital. With the right valuation, you actually can move something much more quicker. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Even that would be considered some possible merger and acquisition at this moment. Mm. Yeah, actually, with Microsoft, I personally involved about 11 acquisition deals.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you think DeepLive would be quite an Microsoft?
No. I mean, we're looking at acquiring other companies.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, not the selling company at the moment, yeah.
Right.
But we're getting companies to grow the company much quicker rather than because, you know, we still need a lot more capital to grow to the to a stage that we actually can really move into some other international markets.
Mm.
Yeah.
Hmm. We're pretty much out of time. Is there anything that you want to talk about that we haven't covered?
I think you covered really nicely, covered all the bases, and certainly with this interview, I'd be happy to make more friends and be happy to share the experience. I'm still learning about how this company is doing at this moment, but I have my own roadmap, and certainly I'm in the next kind of stage is actually moving the company to the United States, and hopefully we have more friends and the partners be interested in working with us.
You mean, you're going to move the actual location up in the US? You're going to open up an office in the US?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you very much for
Enjoy it, yes.